Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thanking you all for tuning in. A lot to talk about this week. Jason Bourne might be back. Alan Tudyk has some sad movie tidbits from his past. Alien Earth has its first two episodes released. We have an actor for Clayface announced. There's going to be a First Blood prequel. The Running Man news. This and a little bit more, but let's get into it, shall we? Let's get off the bat with the First Blood news. They're going to be making a prequel movie to First Blood, and it's going to be directed by Jamari Helander, who directed Sisu. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the word. It's S-I-S-U. You might know it better than me, but nonetheless, that's not the point of the matter. The point is that Noah Centineo is going to be John Rambo, according to Collider and some of the news outlets. And to that, I say no. I mean, he was in the Netflix series The Recruiter and some other young adult goofy movies. I say goofy, but like it's romance bullshit. Like, I just don't see him as John Rambo, the stoic, broken, traumatized John Rambo. Like, why does First Blood need a prequel movie? Why do we need to see Rambo become what he is in First Blood? And even then, like, how are you going to do that balancing act of what he was in First Blood and then what he became in the subsequent sequels? Because it's funny, because the first film, First Blood, was an anti-war. It was about the trauma that veterans endure and then feel like they're outcast when they come home. It was all about PTSD and, like, you know, being abandoned and not right in the head after what they've experienced at war. And then, you know, Rambo 2, 3, and Last Blood and the subsequent sequel, Rambo, we're all a big, oh, he's a war machine. He's America. Yeah, let's get these evil Asian people and all these foreigners. Get them, kill them all. And it just kind of defeated the purpose of what the big dramatic moment at the end of First Blood was. And I just don't see it. We just need to stop this. We don't need a prequel movie. We don't. Just stop it. Go away. Get out of here. And moving on to even more bad news. There's going to be a Terminator reboot, and James Cameron is working on it. He had this to say, though, about it. I'm at a point right now where I'm having a hard time writing science fiction. I'm tasked with writing a new Terminator story. I've been unable to get started on the very far because I don't know what to say that won't get overtaken by real events. We are living in a science fiction age right now, and the only way out is through, by using our intelligence, by using our curiosity, by using our command of technology, and by also really understanding the stark possibilities that we face. So, yeah, we're not going to get a reboot anytime soon. He hasn't finished a treatment. He hasn't even, like, gotten to a script. And to that, I say, good. We don't need another Terminator sequel. I mean, the story was ended perfectly in Judgment Day, T2. And granted, we had Rise of the Machines, which was fucking terrible. We had Salvation, which was serviceable. We had Genesis, which was dog shit. And we had Dark Fate, which is even fucking worse than that. And that's hard to do because the last one was dog shit. How much further can you go? And then the worst part is James Cameron gave his seal of approval for Dark Fate. It's like, brother, are you just cashing a check at this point? What are we doing here, fam? Get out of here with that bullshit. And, like, I don't even want a reboot for Terminator. I don't even want a sequel for Terminator. Just let it die. Let it go. Let's move on to other things. Surely there is something far cooler that we could be doing instead of trying to, like, drudge up the dead corpse of the Terminator franchise. Seriously, help me out here, Hollywood. And on that funny note, after going on those rants and saying how those ideas are bad, Timothy Oliphant had this to say about people's criticisms of rebooting or reviving popular franchises. And he opened about his experiences with previous projects. In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Oliphant talked about reprising roles and how it is gratifying to return to those characters. And it doesn't bother him that Hollywood has been rebooting successful stories rather than pursuing fresh material. He says, it's such a stupid, shallow argument to say Hollywood has no new ideas just because they're rebooting things. And then Timmy Oliphant likened rebooting of a television series and film to a Broadway play. I don't have a problem with people remaking or rebooting things. I mean, everybody goes to Broadway to see the same couple of plays every few years, he added. And Oliphant described his own role of reprisals as positive, saying that every experience I've had revisiting characters or working with the same people again, I'm batting 1,000 in terms of it being really gratifying. I highly recommend it. And he also said that it's about finding the sweet spot when it comes to his level of fame, which doesn't have to do with this. I was just continuing on with that. But to his point about it's a stupid shallow argument, on one hand, sure, I can see that. And with the whole Broadway comparison or analogy, I'll give you that. However, some of these are just lazy cash grabs with no real thought into it and just, hey, let's just milk the IP. Like Dark Fate. We had nothing new to say with the Terminator franchise that we haven't already said or wasn't eloquently said in T2 with its ending and an open ending of how we can control our destinies. Sometimes we just don't need to redrudge any of that stuff. But to that point of, you know, hey, people go see the same plays, you know, fine, fair play to you. I can appreciate that sentiment. So there's a fun little counter argument to my babbling about how we should just get rid of these and we don't need these. But not to say that some of these don't, like, for example, The Running Man, the idea of that being retooled, I guess is the proper way to say it, reimagined into more of the vision of Richard Bachman, a.k.a. Stephen King, who wrote the book under his pseudonym, Richard Bachman, in case you didn't know or weren't alive during that time. I wasn't alive, but I just, you know, hey, Google's your friend, right? But anyway, you know, so that's cool. Like, I can see that. I would love to see that because it's going to be different than what we saw with Schwarzenegger. That's exciting. And how, like, The Running Man was supposed to be like a 30-day challenge to stay alive instead of like this, like, warrior gladiator type game going on. I mean, it's gonna be cool. So, you know, okay, fair play to that. And more fun news, Jason Bourne is gonna be back because Universal has announced they have struck a all-sweeping deal to acquire the television and movie rights to Robert Ludlum's Jason Bourne and Treadstone book series in perpetuity. Translated for us, we're about to get more of the enigmatic CEI agent who isn't even called Jason Bourne, as the article written by Chris McPherson says on Collider. It's a great website. Go check him out. It's great for news and all that stuff. But to that I say, cool, I guess. Like, the first three movies, the first movie was really good, Bourne Identity. The whole trilogy was really good. Jason Bourne, that movie was not so good. The Bourne Legacy was all right. I mean, it's kind of weird how we jumped to a different character. You know, I figured with the Jason Bourne movie or a subsequent sequel, we would have Jeremy Renner's character and Jason Bourne team up to, you know, fight some, you know, American espionage, but that wasn't to be. But who knows? Maybe we'll get Matt Damon back as Jason Bourne. Maybe they'll reboot, as if, you know, they reboot everything in this freaking world, you know, much to some people's chagrin and me, depending on the thing that is being rebooted. But, you know, it could be fun. Good for them, I guess. Alan Tudyk. He's a well-known character actor. He's been in things like Firefly, Resident Alien, and such. Well, he was the titular robot in I, Robot. And he shared in a press junket that his performance, well, actually not in a press junket, he was on Tuned with Jim Cummings, you know, the voice of Winnie the Pooh. He has a podcast where he talks to voice actors and just actors in general. But he talked about how he was removed from press junkets and other things and pretty much swept under the rug that he was the motion capture actor for the robot. And Tunick had this to say. So a lot of people didn't know I did Sonny the Robot and iRobot. And there's a reason for that, because they were doing test audiences with the movie and they score the characters in this kind of test audience. And I got word back, Alan, you're testing higher than Will Smith. And then I was gone. It was done. There was no publicity and my name was not mentioned. And I was like, no shot. I was like, but wait, nobody's going to know that I, and they were like, mm-hmm. So yeah, he tested so well above Will Smith that maybe Will Smith's people, maybe other producers, you know, decided like, this is a Will Smith vehicle. So ain't nobody going to be upstaging Will Smith in all of this. And that's one of the weird Hollywood BS. It sucks for Alan Tudyk, because I'm sure if it had been more well known and advertised, how like the guy who did the motion capture for Gollum and Planet of the Apes, his name escapes me at the moment, but you know who I'm talking about if you're a movie connoisseur. Let me actually look that up real quick, because that's gonna bug me now. Andy Serkis was well advertised as playing Gollum, and how his motion capture really helped bring the character to life and his subsequent role in the Planet of the Apes series. So it could have been a game changing thing for him, but that was not to be. I mean, he still got a successful career. You know, but like, it kind of sucks. You know, you put all your hard work, your heart and soul into a role, and then you're just like, hey, yeah, we're just going to cast you aside because you're upstaging our guy. An interesting news, a movie called Good Boy is coming out, and it will be the perspective of a dog. It's a horror film where, you know, it's the dog sensing all this supernatural stuff going on, and he's going to try and help his owner, Todd, doesn't fall victim to these evil forces plaguing this house. That sounds like an interesting concept. I don't want to read too much into it, but, and horror is not my thing, but like, that concept sounds really unique. I may watch it whenever it hits streaming. So yeah, be on the lookout for that. That's a little fun little tidbit for you. Reacher could be in jeopardy when its upcoming fifth season, if there is a fifth season, and I'm gonna be honest, there probably will be, because that show is really freaking good. But Paramount merged with Skydance, and a lot of stuff has been shuffling around, and the company's been prioritizing what they're going to do. One of those things up in the air was Ninja Turtles, and they are going to continue on with that, especially, I mean, why not? The movie Mutant Mayhem made a ton of money. That'll be continuing on. Last Ronin is still in development right now, and Hamada, I can't remember his first name, but he was the head of Warner Brothers, or like the horror genre, or the horror slate for them, is working on Paramount's horror slate, and he's, you know, tapped and are in charge of overseeing The Last Ronin. That's still in development. But CBS Studios was some of the forces behind the scenes of the first three seasons, I guess fourth now, seasons of Reacher. And they're not going to be part of it anymore. It's going to be up to Paramount Television Studios to take over the helm of production and working on that, along with Cross and The Neely Show, which is still in development. And that as far as I know, as far as they've said, that's still in the works. But, you know, these corporate mergers are always messy. Like, I know Warner Brothers Discovery took a deep hit when they became Warner Brothers Discovery. David Zaslav has made some moves that a lot of people haven't agreed with. And, you know, I mean, HBO Max went to become Max. And then, like, you got your homepage plagued with stupid TLC shows or Discovery shows like My 500 Pound Life and all these other stupid reality shows, and took away from the prestige of HBO Max, which was a good thing. I don't know why you decided to muck all that up, but, you know, hey, I'm not David Zaslav and I'm not in charge of these big companies. But, you know, CBS Studios being one of the driving forces behind Reacher, that could be some cause for concern. Maybe not. Who's to say? Hopefully, though, we don't have a dip in quality or storytelling or what have you. You know, Neely's still in production. Cross is also going to be a part of this new Paramount television studio where they develop all that. CBS Studios will continue to focus on such shows as NCIS, Fire Country, and Ghosts of all that, as well as Star Trek for Paramount Plus. But I just thought that was interesting, and, you know, I like Reacher. I hope it continues to be successful. Season 2 was kind of a dip in quality to me as far as in comparison to Season 1. Season 3, though, was really good and kept me on the edge of my seat the entire time. That was really good. It was a step up. So hopefully that continues into Season 4, which is in production right now. Moving on from that, a lot of people were all in hysterics when James Gunn released footage of him and David Corenswet having what could be called a disagreement on how a pivotal scene should play out. You know, and he was... David Corenswet was questioning a lot of things, and at one point in their discussion over a speaker, because, you know, directors nowadays are very far away from set in, like, what they call video village, where, like, he's surrounded by a bunch of monitors, he's got a headset and a microphone, and he's given direction that way instead of being on set up close. But, like, David Corenswet left set and talked to him about it, and this was an excerpt from that video. "I come from theater, so I love talking about text and what each word means and what each punctuation mark means, and I can piss off people by doing that. So what I need is, I need it to make sense. I need to know what I'm trying to do. So James is saying, no, 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 more emotion. I start yelling back at him." And it was a really interesting dynamic to see, because I've been on set before. I've seen up close how directors work with their actors and what that would look like. And if you're not in that creative space, I could see how that would be like a disagreement. And, you know, some of the grifters are like, "Oh, see, look at that. Even David Corenswet doesn't believe in the vision of James Gunn. Oh, this is all dog shit. Grifting, critical drinker, go away now." Blah. I don't know. I know why I keep tagging him, because he's one of the more popular names and he's just a sham of a critic. But nonetheless, it's an interesting little piece of video. Go out of your way to find it. It's on James Gunn's YouTube. It's a close to 7-minute featurette or little blurb from a longer 60-minute making of feature called The Adventures in Making Superman, which is going to be available when you buy Superman on streaming. But yeah, no, it was really cool to like see them argue their points, and David Corenswet feeling like, "Hey, this should be the moment where I like affirm the fact that, you know, I am human. This is what this means to me." And, you know, them exchanging their philosophies, and, you know, it really wasn't him trying to buck James Gunn. It was more or less trying to affirm what he needed to deliver and what he thinks that James Gunn wanted him, or one assurance that what James Gunn wanted, that they were on the same page. It's really interesting, so go check that out. Moving on to some more fun news. It's been confirmed that Ryan Reynolds will be appearing as Deadpool in Avengers Doomsday, ending months of speculation on whether or not he would be in it. Early morning Tuesday, Ryan Reynolds posted a picture of the Avengers logo without comment, sparking a frenzy of fans' theories. And up until now, his absence from the official cast announcement left a lot of people puzzling and wondering, hey, is he going to show up? When's he going to show up again? Hugh Jackman has kept his appearance, whether he will be or not, close to the vest, saying he's got nothing to add. He's just around, guys. So he might be in it. It'd be cool, you know, to see him back again with Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, James Marsden, Rebecca Romijn, and Alan Cumming, who have all been confirmed reprising their roles in this big crossover event. I'm stoked. I want to see it succeed. I want Marvel to return to form as they were in the heyday, which was really that far away. But yeah, you know, I mean, the quality has been so-so. It's been up and down since Endgame. But even before Endgame, man, like, Thor wasn't that great of a movie. It was good. Dark World left a lot to be desired. Captain America wasn't that great, in my opinion. Captain America Winter Soldier was a step up and way better than its first movie. And, you know, Civil War, goes without saying, was a great movie in itself, which was more of Avengers 2.0 than a Captain America movie. You really want to get technical about it. But, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I feel like a lot of it is also rose-colored glasses because, you know, we had a lot more hits than misses in the first, like, four phases for the MCU. And I'm curious to see how Robert Downey Jr. plays Victor Von Doom. You know, it's a toss-up, man. And if for a lot of people, it feels like stunt casting, which, I mean, I guess it is. You know, when your franchise is struggling right now, who do you go to? The guy who started it all, I guess, right? But, yeah, I feel like they're tightening the focus of this. I mean, Kevin Feige has said that they're going to start pulling back on television shows being a part of the interconnected universe. There will be TV shows, but it won't be like you have to, like, do homework in order to know what's going on in a movie. And I feel like a lot of that, when it came out, you know, I mean, around the time of WandaVision, Loki, and all the Moon Knight and some of the other shows, that was around the time when, like, COVID hit. And, like, you didn't have much else, so, like, you could sit at home and watch all these shows, or at least that was the idea. And they were also riding from the high. I mean, they could do no wrong, essentially, for the longest time. So, yeah, like, why not break into television and, like, see where we could go with that and add more of that to our big, expansive movie universe? And, you know, maybe they've learned from mistakes, and now people are like, oh, I'm so confused. The Marvels doesn't make sense because I didn't follow this character and other stuff. So, you know, we could get back to a return to form. So time will tell on that one. And then more Superman news at the big screen, at the screening for the Peacemaker season 2, James Gunn had this to say about what we could expect from a Superman sequel. He said, "We're scheduling it in now. I'm totally done with the treatment. My treatment are incredibly intense. They're not regular treatments. They're 60-page treatments complete with dialogue and everything. And so now I'm just turning that into a script. We're planning out what we're going to shoot that. We're planning out when we're going to shoot that. It's going to be much sooner than later." And he continued on to say, "I finished the treatment for the next story and what I'll call the Superman saga. The treatment is done, which means a very, very worked out treatment. I'm working on that and hopefully going into production on that not too far away from today." So, hey man, that's really good. I mean, why not, right? That movie was really successful. It'll be cool to see, you know, if James Gunn fully continue. I mean, he wrote the treatment for it. Will he continue writing the next couple of drafts for a script? Will he hand off director duties to somebody else? Will he continue on? Because he's the DC Studios head, man. He's one of the head guys. So he's got a lot on his plate. So he's not just going to have to worry about Superman sequel, but like the other stuff, like Peacemaker 3 or Season 3. And Supergirl and whatever else is coming up next, like the Batman series that they're planning for the DCU, you know, because the Batman's not going to be a part of that. They're still working on that, too. And like he doesn't want a campy Batman. He wants a darker Batman. So time will tell on that front. And continuing on with DC news, DC has tapped the Handmaid's star. What's his name? Sorry, I've scrolled his name. I feel like I should be better at this. But anyways, Max Minghella, the co-star of The Handmaid's Tale, he plays Nick on that show. He is being cast as Clayface. So that'd be really cool. I think he's Clayface. Well, he's in the movie, I should say. I can't see where he's in the article. Oh, no, actually, he is. All right, let's cut this. So Clayface has announced another actor tapped to play a key role. Max Minghella, I think that's how you play his name, but he plays Nick in The Handmaid's Tale. He's been cast to play a Gotham City police detective who is dating the shady Elizabeth Holmes-esque scientist. So that'd be cool. This is going to be a horror film, straight up. You know, it's interesting that they're doing a solo Clayface movie that's going to be in the DC. So you know, I don't know how that's going to go. I'm curious to see. I mean, Clayface is an interesting character all around, and Mike Flanagan is the screenwriter. James Watkins, who directed Speak No Evil, is the director of this. It's set to be released September 11th, 2026. And they are supposed to go into filming September 11th, 2025. Wait, that don't make no sense. Hang on here. Hang on. I've misread that. No, it's set to... Okay. Okay, no, okay. The production set to begin in the fall and supposed to be released in September 11th, 2026. The article had it misstated up the beginning of the article, so that was my bad, guys. And in a strategic news for the studio who's going to bring us the Running Man reboot, they are going to be moving back their release date from November 7th to November 14th. The reason for that being is Predator Badlands is also set to be released November 7th. So, I mean, that's a smart play. Instead of going head-to-head with a movie that's probably going to do pretty well at the box office, it's got, you know, a lot of people raving. Daniel Trachtenberg has done phenomenal as the Shepherd, I'll say, for the Predator franchise. I mean, Prey was so good. Killer of Killers was phenomenal. I don't expect this to be any less than great. You know, some people already have poo-pooed the look of the Yautja, that's the name of the species for the Predator in the franchise. But, you know, they have a lot to say about it. But, like, it looks really good. Elle Fanning seems like she's going to be, you know, a force in this movie. I'm stoked for it. I'm also stoked for The Running Man. But to be honest, if I had to choose between the two, I was going to choose Predator Badlands. So it's good for me as a reviewer and a podcaster that I don't have to see these movies on the same weekend, and I can, you know, spread them out to review them. So that'll be good for me. And the main event, Alien Earth. Is it good? We've got the first two episodes. Episode one titled Neverland, and then the second one, Mr. October. Will it continue the success of Alien Romulus in terms of quality stories in the Alien universe? I will say that signs seem to be pointing in the right direction. I've also been assured from the quote of Noah Hawley, who was the showrunner for TV series like Fargo and Legion, that there will be no references, nothing to... that Prometheus is not mentioned in this at all. Alien Covenant is not mentioned at all. No references, none of that sort. No black goo, thank fucking God. If you want to hear my rant on Ridley Scott and, you know, all that, go to the episode My Beef with Ridley Scott, because I'm not going to get into it here. But I was relieved to know that that's not part of this at all. Alien Earth is set 2 years before the first film, when they land the Nostromos on LV-426, and I'm sure this series is the building blocks to what is to become the voyage of the Nostromos. We also get a new wrinkle into this world. You know, we know androids exist. They're called synths. In this, I can't speak. Words are hard, guys. You know, all these companies are trying for what they're calling for what immortality. One, cyborgs being cybernetically enhanced humans, obviously synths, aka androids, artificial intelligent beings, and then hybrids, synthetic beings downloaded with a human consciousness. And that one, the hybrids, are under the table hush hush experiment. In the first episode, we meet Wendy as a little girl with cancer. And she has been chosen to have her consciousness put into the body of a synthetic being where, you know, because apparently children's brains are easier to transfer than adults because their brains are, quote unquote, too stiff to make the trip. And it's just much easier with kids. And, you know, we meet also Boy Cavalier, the CEO of Prodigy, and you know, he shows her a magic trick, and on the he waves his hands, and like this, there's a big gigantic jumbo screen above them, where she's gonna lay on this like operating table essentially, and it's playing Peter Pan, and we get a lot of Peter Pan analogy in this, and like her little group of other children who are sick who become synths. I can't say the word synth for whatever reason. I don't know what it is. I don't have a lisp, so I don't know why it's so hard for me. But nonetheless, they're called the Lost Boys, right? They beat us over the head with this Peter Pan analogy in the first two episodes. And like, I never thought I'd see the day where an Ice Age character would be in the frame of an Alien movie or anything to do with Alien, but here we are, the second episode. Like, you get a lot of that. You see more of Peter Pan and whoever the Ice Age character is. I don't watch Ice Age. I'm sorry, guys, to know his name. But like, you get a lot more of them than you do of the titular Alien in this franchise. But before all that, we get a title crawl saying, you know, about explaining the synths, the cyborgs, and the hybrids. But the opening scene, it feels a lot like the first Alien movie. It has that atmosphere that Ridley Scott set up in the first film, when like the crew is waking up from cryo sleep and they're just hanging out at the table, eating and laughing and joking and all that. You know, we get on this that that crew is a Weyland-Yutani research crew, and they picked up random alien specimens that are the mission itself, because, you know, the captain says that they've lost a lot of fuel. It's an unusual thing that the amount of fuel they've lost considering their trip, and they're about to go back into cryo sleep for 4 months. I don't know why you need to go back in cryo sleep for 4 months. I mean, you can't age in 4 months. You don't want, whatever. That's besides the point. But, you know, Morrow, who is a cyborg, says that the specimens are the mission and are the priority, and that they will not, you know, get rid of them. You know, one guy shows skepticism, and in their conversation, he explains how five companies own individual territories. The Weyland-Yutani Corporation owns North America and South America. Dynamic has control over North Africa and the Middle East. Prodigy owns Asia, Australia, Greenland, Iceland, and Threshold owns Europe. And Lynch owns Russia. So that's kind of cool. We get a bit of lay of the land on that. And I guess either some of the crew members are going into cryo sleep, and others, some mishap happens, causes their ship to crash land. And they just so happen to crash land in a Prodigy-owned city. And, you know, the Yutani in the Weyland-Yutani Corporation has to call and be like, hey, you know, let us get our stuff. You know, you don't need any of this. And Boy Cavalier is like, nah, fam, it's in my territory. I got ownership now. Possession is 9/10 of the law, essentially. So we'll handle it. And if you got a problem with that, just sue me already. And, you know, he sends the Lost Boys into see how they do under stress and all that, which I don't know. It's a weird thing to send like a bunch of kids essentially into a crash site, because they don't have medical training. They don't have tactical training. They have no sort of training. They're just kids in synthetic, you know, android bodies. So like, what are we doing here? Why are we sending them? But it feels kind of like a plot contrivance, because Wendy's brother is a medic who is to go to the crash site. And, you know, I guess it's a way to get them in the same space, essentially. But, like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I'll ride with it. And I know I'm feeling I'm downing the show, which I'm not. The first few episodes are really good. It's a lot of world building, in a sense, because, you know, We don't know Boy Cavalier. We don't know about these corporations. I never knew that each individual companies owned parts of the world. I knew they had territories in space and different planets and such. So that's kind of neat. the actress who plays Wendy, her name is, what's her name? I had it. Sorry, folks. I should be better about this. Cindy Chandler. She's really good as Wendy. You know, she brings that childlike quality. So they all do. All the Lost Boys do. Their names are hilarious, by the way. Like one's name, Slightly, Curly, Shmee, and Toodles. I don't know why they get all. I know they get to choose their names because a little girl dying of cancer says that her cybernetic body looks like a Wendy. And, you know, she's very into the Peter Pan, I guess, story. I mean, hell, even I think either towards the end of episode one or the beginning of episode two, Boy Cavalier quotes from the book itself, the Peter Pan book. I don't know, man. It gets kind of heavy handed on that front, but no, like overall, like it blends the horror elements of the first film and the more action oriented elements of Aliens very well. I like how they continue with the retro futuristic look that was seen in the first film as well as Aliens. That's a nice touch. That's one of my favorite aspects of Romulus. And I don't know if that was a Ridley Scott call. You know, he was a great director back in the day. I don't want to give the guy too much crap because, you know, I mean, he directed a lot of great stuff. He directed Alien, Blade Runner, two of my favorite movies. Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies of all times. And I know I said I got beef with him earlier, and I don't want to give him credit in recent Alien stuff, but no, with that, if that was his call, good. I mean, if it's Fede Alvarez, I'll give Fede Alvarez credit. No, it's Fede Alvarez. He's the reason for all that. But it's really cool how they continue with that retro futuristic look. And it's kind of neat how, like, you know, on the board of the research vessel was not just a xenomorph face hugger, but like other assorted random alien creatures. One of them being like a eyeball tentacle squid thingy. It just looks fucking gnarly. And what it does in episode two with a cat was cringe inducing, and not cringe in a bad, I mean, cringe in like, oh my God, it like made me like take a step back and be like, that's messed up. But I guess episode one is kind of a bit slow because they don't get to the crash site until episode two, which, I mean, you know, it's a 9-episode season. You know, you got to build things up. But like we spent a lot of time with the synth Wendy and following her a bit and how, you know, she's wrestling with the fact that her brother doesn't know she's alive, in quotations. I mean, I guess pretty much she's alive. It's our brain. It's her function. She's still her. You know, and he's been told that she's been dead for years on end. One of my pet peeves, though, is that, like, I know, like, the androids and stuff are, like, supposed to be super strong and all that, but, like, she makes a superhero landing in episode one, and I'm just like, come on, man. Like, Ash had heightened strength in the first movie, but, like, come on, let's taper it down a little bit. Visually, it looked cool. I get what you were going for, but nah, man, you didn't need the superhero landing on that one. But no, I think it's really well done. These first two episodes, it definitely sets the tone for what's to come. I definitely want to see how it all unfolds and how it leads to the first movie and how the Nostromos gets to LV-426. Boy Cavalier is such a douche. And I get he's young, and they're like, that's the emphasis. Oh, he's a young trillionaire, and like he's got that young rebel renegade attitude in a little bit, but he's pretty self-absorbed and super douchey. And like the reason he created the synths were he wanted to create something that would give him an intelligent conversation, which I'm like, all right, dude, come on now. Get out of here. Timothy Oliphant as the android Kirsch, phenomenal. He said when he read the script, the blurb was Kirsch, a sassy android. And he's like, all right, you want sassy? I'll give you sassy. The Moro, the android, played by Babu Cisse, who's been in such things as Free Fire, great movie, Severance, Eye in the Sky, and 71. He does good as the cyborg, you know, keeping in line with the evil robot in a sense. If I was going to give it a rating, I'll give it a 7 out of 10. You know, blending the old school and the new. And I know we're probably going to get more of Yutani, played by Sandra Yee Sendiver. I'm so sorry, ma'am, that I messed up your name. At least I got Sandra Yee right. give me credit for that part. Your last name, though, is a little bit harder. I guess it's the issues or the burden you have when you're half Korean American from Denmark with Danish last name. I guess they're Danish, but you know, she's been in some cool stuff too. She was in The Foundation, The Wheel of Time, and Assassin's Creed the Valhalla. So, you know, she's been around the block, but we only got a tiny glimpse of her. I'm sure we'll see more, and I'm sure we'll get more of the corporate warfare in episodes to come. You're going to see a lot of mayhem for sure. And I'm pretty sure the Lost Boys, some of them probably ain't going to see the end of the season. If we're going to be honest here, but no, it's a fantastic start. Check it out. That about wraps it up for this week. You can follow me at TheJCVega on all social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com. Get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. Get yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock. The other says Rainbow Dash. Follow Vegas World on YouTube. Help build the subscribers there. Follow the show. And I thank you for your support. I thank you for listening in. Good night and party on.